So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
Ooh, I want some.
Hey, guys, I've got this great idea.
Matt, I'm tired and I want to go home. Besides, Halloween Havoc is about to start.
Look, you have been picking houses all night long. Now it's my turn.
Yeah, that's only because we ended up with two pieces of last year's Christmas fruitcake from the last one you picked.
Yeah!
Whatever house you pick better be good.
Good? You want good? This will be better than good. This one will be great. And I want that.
This place is creepy.
What are you guys, babies or something? This place ain't that bad.
Well, look at it, Matt. It looks like it's haunted. Let's just go home and watch Halloween Havoc and forget all about this one. We've got plenty of candy already.
Wah, wah. Who cares about candy? I came here to see something scary. Cool.
I think I hear Mom calling.
Sisters, what a pain. Who brought her?
Hi, kids.
Wow, it's Tony Schiavone. Hey, shouldn't you be at the pay-per-view?
I have a helicopter waiting to pick me up in a few minutes.
What's that smell, Tony?
It's my wife. She's baking cookies. Would you kids like to have some?
What kind are they?
Only a kind a mother could make. Why don't you come inside and have a bite of her cookies?
We have enough treats already. We came here to see something scary.
You want to see something scary? I'll show you something scary. Come inside.
So, you kids want a little fright in your night, huh?
Gee, Mrs. Schiavone, how did you get up there so fast?
Don't you kids know? All things are possible on All Hallows' Eve. Frightening. Chilling things like spin the wheel, make the deal.
Just one haunting spin will lock Cactus Jack Invader in combat when it lands on one of its many ghoulish, haunting matches.
That's not gonna be scary. If you can't come up with something better than that, we are leaving.
Okay. I've had it, all right? You guys want to be really scared?
Get a load of this.
Let's get out of here!
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock alongside Wei Ting for another week where we go back and we spend 2 hours and 51 minutes of our free time not being so free, but watching a program to then discuss.
Yeah.
That's everything in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah.
Are you growing your hair out?
Not on purpose. No, I haven't had time to get a haircut.
You very much have a death from above kind of a haircut to you.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of haircut is that?
Means there's a lot of it, and we're just going to comb it to the side.
Yeah.
Very
okay.
Very retro. It's a retro look now. So you're bringing it back.
Yeah, I don't like that description.
Oh.
I don't like it.
You make it work.
No, it makes me, if I heard a description of this person looking like this on a podcast, I don't think I'd like this person. So I don't know if I appreciate your description of me.
But everyone listening does like you.
Not necessarily. Yeah, not necessarily.
How would you describe me to the listener?
Just a jovial...
Jovial?
Fun-having, friendly man.
Oh, thank you. Well, what a description. I'm going to update my Twitter bio now.
Jolly.
Happy man.
Yeah.
Do you have any plans this weekend for Halloween, Wei?
None, actually.
None. We talked about this last week. I wanted to see if anything changed.
No, I have no plans.
Oh, wow.
I'm waiting to be invited.
I'm too. But I don't think there's anything happening this weekend. Actually, Braden invited me to go to Dance Cave on Saturday if you're free.
Oh, really? Do I have to dress up?
As a jovial, happy, emo man.
I have a haircut booked for tomorrow, so I don't think that'll work.
We could call somebody and see if he's free.
Who's that?
I think it's been about a year.
Who?
The unofficial third host.
Oh.
Who hasn't appeared in a while.
Oh, you're talking about...
You think he'd be around for Halloween? He gets around for big events.
If he's not skiing or something. Yeah, I think he's probably got a cave to check out or something.
I've never met a guy who's got more elaborate excuses than him. None of which I believe.
I believe him, actually. He went hiking with my roommate. Went with him hiking.
Really?
Yeah. And anyway, why don't we talk
about
this?
When was this? Back in the summer?
Last week.
Oh, last week?
Yeah. They were hiking in like 11-degree weather.
Wow.
It was nuts.
That's a coincidence because the last time I spoke with him, he told me to go take a hike.
Yes. Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about like I know what I've always realized is like as much as I feel like this is a show that's pretty unlistenable sometimes, especially like the first 15 minutes of all these shows. Like if I listen to somebody do the show, I there's no way I would last to whatever review that we're about to do. I wouldn't make it past these 15 minutes. Okay. So I'm just thinking about the people who might feel that way. But of course, you know, doing this show for a while now, I know that there are a lot of people that enjoy these 15 minutes. Sometimes even more than the review. So I'm a little conflicted. I'm like, oh man, I can't believe I'm talking about my friend's hiking trip. And who would give a shit about that? But I know some people do. But I also feel like some people might not.
Listen,
but what do I do? I'm conflicted.
Do you realize we could do this review of Halloween Havoc?
Yeah.
The first thing you hear is our first match was. We could do this review in 10 minutes, and that would include results, key finish spot, an opinion from both of us about said match. We move to the next, and in 10 minutes, we're done.
Okay, sure.
We could do that.
Yeah, we can.
And that would suck.
Yeah.
That would be a really boring show to listen to.
Right. But, I mean, we can also do this review in an hour, in 15 minutes, only talking about these matches. You know what I mean? Like, we can elaborate on these... while keeping it to the topic.
Think of Halloween Havoc 1993 as a skeleton, okay, for the Halloween theme. It's a skeleton.
Okay, appropriate.
And it's you and I that have to put meat onto this skeleton and give it life and give it color.
Let their cheeks
be rosy with flavor and make it an actual living creature.
I don't know if that
is what the context and the discussion that you and I provide give to the bare bones that is Halloween Havoc 1993.
Gotcha, okay. Bare bones is what you're getting at. I was like, that's a very interesting analogy. What type of profession would require somebody putting meat on a skeleton? Usually you take meat off until you reveal the skeleton.
Well, we are doing the exact opposite, which is we are taking something that is malnourished and pretty deathly.
Okay, so we're feeding.
We're giving life to it.
Right, we're feeding Halloween Havoc 1993,
yes,
is what you're saying.
we are taking that injured bird, nursing it back to health, and sending it back into the world so that the entire world has a different view on Halloween Havoc 1993.
That is our duty, yes. Is to improve the reputation, to get people talking about Halloween Havoc 1993 again.
Historic Halloween Havoc event.
Yeah.
This was on the WWE Network, and this was solely picked because this occurred the night after the Toronto Blue Jays won.
Yeah, the only reason we chose this.
And defeated the Philadelphia Phillies in a classic moment in life.
Oh, yeah.
When Joe Carter hit the 2-2 pitch off of Mitch the Wild Thing Williams.
So much of that moment, obviously, has you know, look, being from Toronto, so much of my experience of that moment is only from experiencing it as a Toronto fan and also talking to fellow Toronto fans. I've never spoken to a Philadelphia Phillies fan from that time, and what a terrible moment it must have been for somebody on the other end.
To be watching that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's all that much different than a few years ago when the Leafs were up defeating the Bruins and then self-destructed in Game 7, was it?
No, I don't remember that.
It was only a few years ago, but the Leafs had this series goddamn won.
But it wasn't the
And they fell apart in the game.
Right.
And
but it wasn't the
were eliminated.
But it wasn't the Stanley Cup Finals in overtime.
This was the height of...
Yeah.
However, that said, the Phillies win that game, it's still only tied. They would have gone to Game 7.
Yeah.
There was no way they were beating the Jays.
Game 7 would have been too much of a cliche, though. It would have almost... You would have been like... It would have been like a kid's, you know, Disney movie at that point. Game 6 made it a bit more realistic.
That was also kind of the end of Mitch Williams. I mean, he would just bounce around after that, but that is what he'll be remembered for.
Wild
the guy who gave up the 2-2 home run to Joe Carter.
Yeah.
And
that sucks, because, I mean, I feel like he probably performed pretty well the rest of the season, I bet. Wasn't he the closer?
Yeah, he was. Yeah. But not the most consistent closer.
Oh.
So that was
okay.
look at him. I mean, the history speaks for itself.
Yeah.
Not everybody is going to go down as a legend. Not everybody is going to go down for positive contributions. Some people have to be known as the guy that blew it.
Yeah, I suppose.
Bill Buckner.
Or that, anyway, never mind. I was going to say, like, in relation to that, is that bearded asshole from Kansas City, that kid.
Oh,
who
boy.
Who caught that ball. Anyway, we talked about this on Monday. We don't need to rehash this.
You had some venom thrown that kid's way.
Yeah. But anyway, like, that guy's probably a hero in Kansas City. Meanwhile, in Toronto.
Look at Steve Bartman. He caught a ball.
He's our Steve
cost
Bartman.
The Cubs. Well, it was almost the reverse.
Yep.
This guy ended up helping his team by reaching over. However, in the replay, I mean, they've gone over that. Had it hit that fence and he didn't catch it, it still would have been ruled a home run.
Had it gone over? Wait, had he not
that
caught
white
it?
Fencing?
Yeah,
part?
What if I don't know if it was about to hit that? It could have hit the right. It could have hit the
corner. Problem I have with that guy is that when Aaron Andrews interviewed him,
oh yeah, he lied.
He's a liar.
Yeah,
he's a liar.
Fucking liar.
So one day, one day we're gonna get him on our show,
and
we're gonna introduce him as the liar.
Yeah.
And I'm going to question every fact. I'm going to say, where are you right now?
Oh, I'm in Kansas City. Actually, speaking of Halloween, that would be a great Halloween costume.
Oh, I'm sure someone's going to go as that guy next year.
Yeah.
Actually,
if I
end up going as something this year, I have an idea.
What's that?
I'm not going to tell you yet.
Okay. Give me a hint.
It's in this room.
Me?
Nope.
Coffee?
Not going to tell you.
It's in this room.
You asked one question.
You're going to go as a laptop?
I might go as your moonshine there. What do you have in a jar?
A smoothie.
Oh, a smoothie.
Strawberry banana smoothie.
He's got like a mason jar that he's carrying this in.
It looks like it keeps it fresh.
This has to be some kind of alcohol.
No.
It's not. What's in your smoothie?
A banana.
Oh, nice.
Strawberry. Orange juice. Some almond milk.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It tastes good?
It's all right. Yeah. It's not bad.
It's all right.
I mean, it's always an experiment. Okay, enough. Let's get on. I can't even have this conversation, knowing that people are going to listen to it.
Wow, just crazy.
Let's talk about
you
wrestling.
You are the wild thing of this podcast.
Okay, great.
Halloween Havoc, 1993. Sunday, October the 24th. From New Orleans, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. First, what place? What arena?
The UNO Lakefront Arena.
Does that still exist?
To the best of my knowledge, it still exists.
Oh, wow.
It was a far cry from the Silverdome / Superdome.
The Smoothie King.
Oh, yeah, the Smoothie King Center. This was not the Smoothie King Center. In fact, this will look to be, I believe there are about 3,000 paid in this entire arena.
Mm.
So, hard times for World Championship Wrestling. To put this into perspective, this was after the Bill Watts reign. He had left much earlier in 1993, and this was when Eric Bischoff had been installed as the new executive producer of WCW. So this is kind of when they had gone through all those different incarnations of various people heading WCW, Jim Herd, then it went to Kip Fry, and then to Bill Watts. They got away from that. Bischoff got the role, and Dusty Rhodes was the booker at this time. And we will talk about Dusty Rhodes and his knack for booking finishes in October of 93.
I was wondering, to me, like when I think of early 90s WCW, all I am really interested in is its association with Jim Herd. And was this pre or post Jim Herd?
This was post Herd.
And I was noticing a real lack of
stupidity. On this show.
Lumberjacks and whatnot.
Yes. They found other areas to be incompetent in 1993 rather than the over-the-top goofball characters.
You say over-the-top, though, but this intro to start off the show.
You're right. I spoke too soon. I simply told you ahead of time, this intro, with exclamation points, not emojis, actual exclamation points.
Yep.
And
this is like, to me, this was the highlight of the show, the opening moments of the show. And if any of you are on the fence about watching this, just tune in for the first 2 minutes.
This 4 minutes hooked me.
Yeah.
I've always been a big fan of Halloween. So as a wrestling fan as a kid, I loved a Halloween-themed wrestling event. I always enjoyed Halloween Havoc because of the ability to do stuff like this. And this opening video, which, let me tell you, might have been the most expensive thing on this entire show.
I'm trying to think what else would have been more expensive.
There was some pyro.
A taser. probably not.
No, that was cheap. This was like a small production. And this was like the opening to like a movie or something. This was like a made-for-TV movie that they created.
This was a small, big production, much in the same vein as, you know, the Bash at the Beach. Remember
Cheatham,
that?
The little guy. Yes.
Yeah, and Vader and
there were no explosions in this particular
nothing like
vignette.
That. But think like, I mean, think the syndicated, like, it looked like, I was going to say like Baywatch, but except at a haunted house. Like it's like that type of cheesy but well good looking type of production.
I just pictured Dusty Rhodes directing this whole thing. Sure. That was his thing was always that I create movies, baby.
Yeah.
This just yelled Dusty Rhodes to me, this opening. And
it was like an episode of Goosebumps.
Yes, it was. Did you a movie of Goosebumps just came out?
Recently?
It's in the theaters.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's it called?
Goosebumps.
It's in theaters?
I'm almost...
Goosebumps haven't been popular in a long time, though.
I don't even know if it has anything to do with the book.
Oh, so it's just a show book. Called... It's a movie called
Goosebumps. It's a movie called Goosebumps.
Which has nothing to do with R.L. Stine.
Upset about moving from the big city to a small town, young Zach Cooper finds a silver lining when he meets his beautiful neighbor, Hannah. The teen is surprised to learn that Hannah's mysterious father is R.L. Stine, the famous author of the best-selling Goosebumps series.
Shut the fuck
That's
up.
What the movie is about. It is totally tied to Goosebumps.
That is crazy.
Oh, man. You need to have a Fear Street.
Hey, do you... Oh, my God. Sorry, I just got an email about this shirt.
Oh, forgot to talk about this on Monday. Do you want to share this?
Do you think we're even allowed to talk about it?
Of course we are. What are they going to do?
So, I mean, some of you might know that we, in our store, lawradio.prowrestlingtees.com, we over like probably a year ago, we started selling. Jason Agnew had the brilliant idea of making a parody for shirt, but instead it would say. And So we had this logo design and we put it up there thinking that, oh, okay, it's just parody. Nobody's really going to pay attention. So, you know, it's been up there. I've seen some people buy it. And then I recently get a message today from Ryan, our friend from Pro Wrestling Tees, who actually informed us that I had to pull down the shirt. Sent me some shit.
Is affecting live audio wrestling.
I know. So,
boy,
it's us versus. Okay, look at that.
Pick your side, folks. Exactly. I guess we're gonna have to enlist.
Yeah,
white ting shirts.
So now,
what issue could they have with that shirt?
So this latest email, they're saying Ryan responded saying that they're actually demanding that we pay agent for the sale price of each sold.
Oh, what?
And we have only sold 9. $20 times 9, basically $180.
Based on what?
I don't fucking know, man. Who knows? I don't know.
By the way, this Goosebumps, this is a screen image from the movie. Does the person on the left not look strikingly familiar to a former work colleague of ours?
I don't know, actually. It could be a number of our work colleagues.
It very much looks like one more Ronaldo to me.
Oh, okay. certainly.
I really want to see this Goosebumps movie now.
I don't.
No?
No. Have you? Did you used to watch the Goosebumps TV show?
I read all the books, but I didn't really watch
So you must have never seen Say Cheese.
Oh, with the camera?
Yeah.
No, I never saw it. I read it, though.
You know who's stars in Say Cheese?
No.
Ryan Gosling.
Whoa, wow.
Yeah, he's the kid in Say Cheese.
Wow. Well, that's interesting.
A very young Ryan Gosling.
I guess he grew up, and that was his launching pad.
Say
Goosebumps.
Cheese. Yeah.
Say Cheese. Okay, well, that was our detour for the opening of this video, where these little kids are out on Halloween, and they're trick-or-treating, and it's like 4 kids, and one of them just wants to give up trick-or-treating so that they can go home and watch Halloween Havoc.
Yeah.
You know, every kid's concern at the age of 8. Come on, guys, Halloween Havoc's on.
Yeah.
Can't miss this. And a kid points out this giant house that they go to approach, and there's dry ice coming from the ground. This was an interesting trivia note, because this was the only big house on a WWE pay-per-view in 1993. And the 4 kids approach the house, and...
By the way, the kids are dressed as... One of them is dressed up as a vampire. Another is dressed up as a Frankenstein's monster. One is dressed up as the witch.
And the big costume of the year.
Sting. Like, one of these is obviously...
Which, believe me...
Not like the others.
There were a number of stings in the crowd, by the way.
Yes,
if you
there were.
Saw some of these...
One guy in particular was really stood out to me.
Is that the guy with the chain?
I don't know.
Or was it...
This dude, yes.
John Cena.
This is John, yeah.
With this bulging vein in his neck that looks like a wishbone.
Yeah.
This guy was scary.
This guy stood out. And if you watch the show or that particular match, you'll know. What was weird about that guy, though, was he was actually chanting Sting Sucks.
Yeah, I know. I caught that, too.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. This guy was my favorite. This guy was wearing a dress shirt with a gold chain around his neck with Sting face paint.
Oh, wow.
Because he was probably going to go out afterwards. For a party or something, or go to a club in downtown New Orleans. Mm. It's like, you know what? I'm going to a wrestling show. I got my Sting paint on, but got dressed for afterwards. I mean, there was... Say what you will about Sting, but man, that face paint was over here in New Orleans.
Face paint, I feel, is... why don't fans face paint that much anymore? I mean, I think on a certain portion of the roster still does it, but fans don't really do it.
Well, it's a serious time commitment to put that on, to take it off.
But look at this guy. This guy painted his face. Now he's being talked about in 2015 on a podcast.
This guy looks crazy.
Yeah.
This guy looks utterly crazy. We'll get to him in a few minutes. But these kids, they approach and they knock on the door, and Vampire Tony Schiavone answers the door. And what is Tony Schiavone's first question that is asked by the kids? Shouldn't you be at the pay-per-view? These kids are alert.
Yeah.
And then they ask about a smell. And Schiavone says it's his wife. who is baking cookies. And they enter the house, and Shivani says, "You kids want a little fright in your night?" as he proceeds to teleport upstairs. And then this turns into a plug for the Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal match, and the kids essentially no-sell this as quite the lame idea. And then his voice changes, rips off his face, this being Tony Schiavone, to reveal a monster with a horn sticking out of his forehead, like he's a member of the New Day and the Unicorn Army. And then we transport to the arena. We teleport.
Yeah. Just imagine, like, the horror of trick-or-treating and seeing
Tony Schiavone when he's supposed to be at a pay-per-view.
Yeah. And Tony Schiavone here plays creepy very well. Like, he has some acting chops, this guy.
Tony Schiavone was, you know, you talked about Tony Schiavone near the end of WCW where you really felt this guy was on autopilot and not that invested. Not the case in 1993. This guy was all in on everything.
Tony Schiavone kind of stole the show between this and between his actual costume during the pay-per-view. He had a big role here. But here he was able to play the creepy molester very well.
Well, then we have as well, what was somewhat funny is that this entire opening video was done as if Halloween Havoc was actually taking place on Halloween, which most years wouldn't work out for a Sunday. But in 1993, it would have.
Oh.
This was on October 24th. They would have been stupid to run a pay-per-view on Halloween night. But nonetheless, how confusing.
Sorry, this was on the 24th.
This was on the 24th. So I'm saying you could have done Halloween Havoc on the 31st. But they chose not to, wisely. Eric Bischoff is our host for the evening, dressed as General Custer in this colonel outfit, and he throws to Tony Schiavone.
He just looked like a six-year-old dressed up in a cowboy outfit.
Yeah, that was essentially his role. And what an unnecessary role on this pay-per-view for Eric Bischoff. Like, he did pretty just much about nothing. And he throws to Tony Schiavone, who is dressed up as Jesse Ventura, and Jesse Ventura is dressed up as this doctor and calls himself Bourbon's number one gynecologist. Bourbon Street's number one gynecologist.
Well, that was the joke. He was actually dressed up as some, like mad scientist or something.
Schiavone plugs the main event, and then Jesse Ventura pulls a thermometer, theoretically, out of the ass of Tony Schiavone and says he is heating up. What a start to this show. I was very much excited for where WCW was going to take this event.
It was a very bizarre opening, but it told me that I was in for quite a show.
That we were. We kicked things off with a six-man tag as we had the Shockmaster, who had debuted a few months earlier, which you may have heard about, then was changed to Uncle Fred as just this trucker. And now he was back to being the Shockmaster, but still dressing as a trucker, if you can follow that.
I was excited when I looked up the match list for the show, and I saw that the Shockmaster was going to be on the show. Because I don't know, to my recollection, I don't know if I've ever actually seen a Shockmaster match. You know, I mean, of course, I've seen that the segment that everybody has, but I don't know if I've ever seen him in a match. So I was very disappointed to see regular old Fred Ottman here taking on the name of the Shockmaster, but just looking like
he was dressed in a yellow hard hat, an unbuttoned jean shirt, which all due respect to Fred Ottman, wonderful man, probably shouldn't be a guy with unbuttoned anything, and then jeans on top of it.
Like, there's nothing shocking about any of this. How is this man at all still the master of shocking?
He was the
This is about as normal of a getup as I would imagine this guy wears.
Perhaps he works by day on a construction site where you could come into an electrical current somewhere during the workday.
He's an electrician.
Yeah. So he could get shocked, literally.
So that'd be quite the name for an electrician to, like, an electrician's company, Shockmaster.
Shockmaster.
Yeah.
His team consisted of Ice Train, a guy who was maybe the most unassuming employee of WCW from 1993 all the way until they went out of business.
Really?
He would later become M.I. Smooth, who became a limo driver for Ernest Miller. And Charlie Norris, who I believe would later sue WCW for racial discrimination.
Charlie Norris, as in Chuck?
Charlie Norris. Not to be confused with Chuck.
What's weird is, this guy's name is Charlie Norris, but he has basically a stereotypical Native American gimmick. That's what he had.
Yes, so Charlie Norris, a footnote in WCW history, other than the fact that...
Charlie Norris. That's great. What a coincidence. But that's part of the joy of watching these early WCW shows, is just seeing all these prelim guys that I would have never otherwise had a reason to think about.
Yes, he left the promotion shortly after losing to Cactus Jack Invader in the opening rounds of the Lethal Lottery at Battle Bowl. The following month, he subsequently filed a racial discrimination lawsuit against WCW the following year.
Okay.
So this was a big night for him, taking on Kane and Cole.
Who's
not
that?
The director of operations or the lead announcer on Raw, but rather Stevie Ray and Booker T under their original names in WCW, and just to make this 3-on-3, the Equalizer, who would later become David Sullivan, EVAD. The crazy brother of Kevin Sullivan.
Yes, right.
What a plethora of garbage in this match.
Yeah, I mean, well...
Gimmick-wise.
That's not true. Gimmick-wise. I mean, Harlem
Shockmaster was a horrible character. Equalizer was a horrible character.
Yeah.
Ice Train was just Ice Train, and Charlie Norris was a footnote.
Harlem Heat were great, though.
I wouldn't say great in 1993. They would go on to be a well... regarded tag team in WCW. Yeah. Booker T would have a very exceptional career.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we had just a mishmash, if you will.
Kane and Cole.
Yes, this is going to be very confusing, but Kane was Stevie Ray. Cole was Booker T. And there was a battle between Ice Train and Kane over this turnbuckle shot where Kane got knocked into it.
Kane, what the hell? Like Kane and Abel? Is that the idea?
Yeah, you would think maybe they were, I don't know, they just wanted a...
Kane. Does that sound like a Harlem dude's name?
Kane? Does Cole sound like a...
No. I don't know any black guy named Cole or Kane.
Cole, with a K. It's like all these names that sound like they would start with a C, but they just forced them into a K.
Kane and Cole.
Yeah. Kane kicked Ice Train from the apron, and Ventura says that the Equalizer will make mistakes because he doesn't know what he's doing in there, and then estimates that the Equalizer weighs between 400 and 450 pounds. Just a ridiculous figure for the Equalizer.
Pretty rough estimate.
Yeah, very rough estimate. The heels got the advantage on Norris. There was a spinning scissors kick by Cole. The match... I will say this, it did have heat throughout this, I guess being in the opener perhaps. There was a bear hug by Shockmaster, who then drops to his knees and then slams Cole. And this was the finish in 9:45. And then just to whet your appetite for what was to come in subsequent weeks, we had a brawl between the Equalizer and the Shockmaster to tease that confrontation down the road.
It looked like the Shockmaster was actually getting a push here, which I'm actually very surprised by, especially...
Were you stunned?
I was stunned, yes. Exacerbated. But I can't believe that they would invest anything in this guy, even without the gimmick. I felt like the gimmick, you know, was the main thing, but then once that gimmick...
you know, between this failed. Opening match with the Shockmaster and the conclusion of the main event... Seemed like it would have been a natural fit to align the Shockmaster with Harley Race.
Yes, that's right.
That could have been his go-to backup.
It would have been. What does it say about, you know, this, I suppose, the state of their high roster at the time in pro wrestling when the smallest guy here would go on to have the best career of the bunch?
I would say quite the lost opportunity when it comes to the long term of the Equalizer. Mm-hmm. Really unfortunate. Eric Bischoff is with Terry Taylor, who will be the second referee for tonight's match between Rick Rude and Ric Flair. And Eric Bischoff asks him why he politicked so hard to get into this match. And Terry Taylor says that this referee's outfit is not a Halloween costume. His promo was still the same delivery as he would do his Red Rooster promos in from years ago. And he says, I've done a lot of bad things in the past, bringing acknowledgement to that character, and we'll call it down the middle tonight. And Terry Taylor, I've got to say, if you've got some spare time, it's really worth going and looking at the last 30 years of this guy who has just bounced to every promotion and has just always found work. He went from WCW to WWF. He went back and forth 10 million times, went to TNA, got let go by TNA. Now he's with WWE in an executive capacity. I mean, the guy has just always been able to find a job consistently in wrestling.
He must be talented.
Whether it's in front of the camera or behind the scenes. I mean, there's a guy that just has always had a role in the business. Then our second match of the night was Ricky Steamboat taking on Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, two men who were on the very first WrestleMania card. This was a far cry from that. Paul Orndorff was a late replacement for Yoshi Kwan, who suffered a knee injury.
I'm so upset I didn't get...
We didn't get to see the Steamboat Kwan Classic.
Yeah. I wish I could have seen some of Yoshi Kwan on this show.
Paul Orndorff came out, and he had the assassin, Jody Hamilton, in his corner. Jody Hamilton, who is the father of referee Nick Patrick, was also running the power plant at this time. So that was the connection with WCW at this time. And, I mean, when you think the assassin, Jody Hamilton, natural that you would think Paul Orndorff makes a perfect pairing. I mean, these two are just, you look at them and it's like, how could these two not be together?
I've never once thought about the assassin Jody Hamilton, so I don't know what you're talking about.
This was where we got a shot of our well-dressed Sting fan in his gold chain and button-up dress shirt. In 1993, the way the crowd got under the skin of Paul Orndorff was to chant Paula at Paul. Mm-hmm. The idea that you are a woman just irritated Paul Orndorff
How would you like it if I called you Jean, or what's the feminine version of John?
John? I don't know if there is a female version of John. I don't know if it would rattle me, though. I will say that.
Okay. Oh,
don't compare me to a woman.
You got thicker skin.
Well, they fought on the elevated ramp, which was a staple of WCW. And while they were on this ramp, there was a shot of the upper deck that looked so empty. It looked like it was an empty arena up there. It was darker than the last time we watched a show in New Orleans at that Raw.
Oh,
remember that? In the dark? Steamboat runs and dives into the ring, but misses Orndorff. There was this wacky-looking flying arm drag where he hooked the wrist of Orndorff in midair, and then goes down and just attacks his left arm with a hammerlock applied to Orndorff. They just seem to be on different pages. Then Steamboat wrapped the arm around the post as Nick Patrick is busy speaking to the assassin, saying, hey, Dad, stay away from getting involved in this match. Ventura is calling for a DQ after Orndorff was sent into the post, and Schiavone then says, you are only disqualified if you throw your opponent headfirst into the steel post. Almost as if he was telegraphing a rule that would not be enforced with The Undertaker and Brock Lesnar at Hell in a Cell.
Hmm.
What an odd rule. You can throw a guy into the post, but if it's head first, that will be a DQ.
That is very odd.
Seems very reckless. Then he attacks the fingers of Paul Orndorff, and at this point, even Schiavone gives up and says, yeah, that's illegal to be going after the fingers.
Is it?
I don't know. I've never seen someone get disqualified over joint manipulation.
I haven't either. Why would that be a rule?
Steamboat then fired up. And Steamboat's a great babyface when it comes to firing up. But he did like this Taibo routine in the ring, like to signal his fire.
Did like a Drake dance.
It was kind of like that. Which, by the way, I watched numerous of memes of the Drake videos mm-hmm. that everyone has been parodying. And mm-hmm. they're great.
Yeah.
I almost feel like Drake's people maybe started them to get the ball rolling.
I really don't doubt that. I mean, I really don't doubt that this guy is calculated enough to make a pretty minimalistic video that is just ripe for memeing. You know what I mean?
And then just encourage people by putting a few out yourself, and then people are going to copy them.
Whether or
thinking
not he,
everyone's
whether,
making fun of you.
Whether or not he did the originals himself, I don't know. But memes today are the best way to publicize a song. I mean, look at Psy. Look at, you know, the Harlem Shake. Every time somebody's sharing your song, they're playing your song.
I love those Harlem Shake videos.
I hate them. I hated them.
I thought they lasted just long enough.
They lasted. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. That's where we differ in life. Orndorff then pulls him off the apron, runs him into the edge of the apron, and then sends him over the barricade. And these fans, this one guy, he comes over and he's consoling Ricky Steamboat as he's been thrown over the barricade. They love this man. Then they have a mid-ring collision with a double cross body. Orndorff tries to use the ropes, and Patrick kicks him repeatedly until he lets go of the rope. Steamboat then hits an atomic drop, sends him into the ring, chops him off the top for two, and then Steamboat blocks a pile driver. Orndorff bridges from below, nearly falls off from a catapult into the corner by Steamboat. Then there's a cross body off the top, and the assassin once again distracts Nick Patrick. This allows only for a two count. Steamboat sends Patrick out of the way, runs at Orndorff, ducks, and Steamboat goes over the top to the floor. And with the referee distracted, the assassin, Jody Hamilton, takes a foreign object, places it into his mask, and proceeds to headbutt Ricky Steamboat on the floor, and Ricky Steamboat is counted out at 18 minutes and 35 seconds. This would be the string of ungodly lame finishes on this show.
Yeah, yeah, I wasn't too happy with the finish, but and I thought the match was a little long in the middle, but I was very happy to see this on the card. I thought this was a match between two legends, you know, still in with the two of them in very good shape and close to or at their physical primes. I thought Steamboat just worked so fast and so equal parts technical and intense. So
this was a good match. This was consistently this show. I thought a lot of good wrestling and had to overcome strange finishes.
Well, they all often just all felt like times where they didn't want to give out clean finishes because they wanted to save that for a future show. I don't know in the grand scheme of things how big of a show this was, but it felt like they weren't willing to let any clean finish go.
Well, I've got to say, over the last week, we saw Paul Orndorff have to step in on last-minute notice to face Ricky Steamboat. And, you know, we had Louis Smoka and Patty Houlihan just be thrust into the main event on short notice, and you know they work the clean finish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Horrible analogy.
Nice. Anyway. No, you're really good. You're really good at introducing the current events into these.
I always try to timestamp these so people listening to this in 2020.
I can't help. I can't
remember Patty Houlihan.
Yeah, I can't help but like think about anybody.
Jay Hunter knows who Patty Houlihan is.
Does he?
The Irish contingent. Oh, everyone's aware of Patty Houlihan.
All right. Cool, man. Nice.
What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, like,
you were going to insult me.
I wasn't going to insult you. I would never insult you.
That's sarcastic.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I can't help it. Like, I'd love to know, but I don't. I feel like how often would somebody listening to us be confused about what we're talking about?
Wait, I'm confused all the time, and I host this show, co-host this show with you. I think it's perfectly natural. I do this show for me.
True.
I do this show for me. Let's move on to our next match. I'm kind of scattered today. I'm not going to lie. I feel today has been a very busy day, and I'm just all over the place, so I'm kind of relying on you to be the glue way.
Don't do that. I'm not going to help you there.
The next thing was rather interesting. Tony Schiavone mentioned that this week, WCW is getting set for their European tour. And this would be a very famous tour in WCW history.
Oh, yeah?
Because two members of the WCW roster would have a big scuffle at a hotel involving scissors. And that would be Sid Vicious and Arn Anderson. And we'll get to that a bit later on. But then Schiavone noted that WCW is now recognizing Rick Rude's big gold belt as a world championship, which is going to be the brief recess we are going to take to explain what the fuck was going on with WCW's world titles in 1993. You see, WCW had the affiliation with the NWA and used the NWA title as their world title. Ric Flair took that belt with him when he left to go to the WWF because he never ended up dropping it. And as NWA champion, you would put down a $25,000 deposit when you became champion in case anything happened and maybe you weren't refusing or were refusing to lose the title. You had this over your head, this 25 grand. So with him not getting that money, he took the title to be his possession and left. And it resulted in a legal case with WCW and the WWF. And they went back and forth with that particular case. So in the meantime, they just held the the NWA title was vacant for quite some time from the time Flair left until the G1 in 1992. During that lengthy, close to 9 month or so period, they crowned a WCW heavyweight champion.
Who was?
At that time, it went to, pretty much right away, it went to Luger. And they just proceeded on in the wake of Ric Flair with a new WCW champion. Then the following summer, they had the deal with New Japan where they crowned the NWA champion. So now you had two champions. You had the WCW champion and the NWA champion. Then, in 1993, Wei is so bored right now. He's rolling his eyes at this story.
No, this is interesting.
I'm going to quiz you on this afterwards.
I'm paying attention.
So, WCW withdrew from the NWA,
yep.
And therefore had to change the name of their title. They couldn't name it the WCW title, because we already got one of those.
Yeah.
Why we have two, I don't fucking know. So we created a subdivision of WCW. It was WCW International. Mm. And WCW International had a heavyweight title. And now it was acknowledged as a world title. So we had two goddamn championships until 94 when someone had the bright idea, hey, let's have one fucking title and unify these. And that's what happened.
Mm,
so we had two titles.
Cool.
There you go. The more you know.
Yep. Interesting. Lovely.
Lord Steven Regal.
So Rude has the international title.
The WCW International Heavyweight title, which will be defended against Ric Flair tonight, if that wasn't confusing enough.
No.
Lord Steven Regal, who is accompanied by Sir William, Bill Dundee.
How odd.
Yes.
Well, how long did he do that?
He did this for a bit where he was with Regal. Bill Dundee was also a part of the booking committee as well.
Okay.
So he had a role backstage.
It's just, it was very amusing to see this. About as southern of a man as you can find, and Bill Dundee dressed up as a British dude named Sir William.
Well,
how was his accent?
Well, I mean, originally he was from New Zealand, which is, lots of British roots.
Oh, okay.
So maybe that was where Sir William. Well, what a name, too.
Yeah.
Sir William. And, yeah, not much of a role he really had. I mean, the guy never, he was just there. He was just a body next to Regal. So Lord Steven Regal was our television champion, defending it against the British Bulldog, who was between WWF stints. Had a nice little vacation in WCW. This was marketed as the Battle of Britain and went so far as to include Michael Buffer for the ring introductions.
He was announcing all the title.
All the title matches he did on this particular show.
Yeah.
So this is how far back we went with the Michael Buffer deal. There were certainly some Putski candidates on this particular show.
Yeah, well, Ice Train, for one.
Ice Train, Bulldog we will put in there.
Yep.
And, I mean, you can never overlook one Rick Rude on these particular shows.
You can't. But Davey Boy, though, for somebody so large at this time, still incredibly
agile.
Yeah.
Regal is complaining of Bulldog greasing. Comparing him to... he just oiled himself up for this particular match. There were cartwheels and flips by the Bulldog, constant reversals by both men in the early going, and Schiavone identifies a cravat being applied, and Ventura asks if that is a wine company. Bulldog tries to flip him over with his feet from his back, and Regal just crashes down in midair over top of him, and then Bulldog applies a surfboard. Meanwhile, Sir William is yelling at Randy Anderson, and Bulldog gets distracted, and Schiavone points out that this is the third straight match where we've had distraction from the outside So Shivani is certainly keeping count. Regal hit a senton, identified as the Regal Roll, and Ventura bringing up Edouard Carpentier. And then Regal is putting pressure on his neck as he's yelling at Bulldog and calling him swine. And Regal starts attacking the midsection of the Bulldog and kept going back to it. So every time he'd hit him in the midsection, Bulldog sold it really big. And Bulldog comes off of his back with a Hurricane Rana from his back off the mat, fires up. They had mentioned this was a 15-minute time limit and are bringing you updates every 5 minutes. Regal tries to roll out of the ring, and then Bulldog lifts him for a power slam, but knocks Sir William off the apron, only gets a two on Regal. Then Bulldog hits a pile driver and gets a two count right as time expires, and it is ruled a draw. And then Michael Buffer gets on the microphone to clarify that the champion keeps his belt. And in terms of hitting the time, I mean, everyone was on point here, including the referee. So it wasn't one of those awkward time stand still to wait for the clock to expire. They executed it very well.
Mm-hmm. Another non-finish, but honestly, I don't think it really bothered me at all, especially for a match like this where, you know, we see Regal basically wrestle this mat style, this British mat wrestling style all the time. But I think it, for me at least, it was rare to see Davey Boy wrestle the same style. And I thought they both did a tremendous job at it. So I think both men looked very fantastic, very quick, very technical. It was impressive for me to see Davey Boy pull off an inverted surfboard like this, especially at his size. So another nice surprise I didn't expect to see on the show.
Eric Bischoff is at the wheel with Big Van Vader and Harley Race, and we have all the options for what tonight's main event will be, where they are going to spin the wheel. This also included a Prince of Darkness match.
Yeah, what does that mean?
That would have been a blindfold match, which would have been my pick, a Prince of Darkness match. So they spin the wheel, Pyro shoots out of the wheel, and it lands on something near and dear to every New Orleans fan, a Texas death match. And we have these plastic snake ornaments by the wheel as well. So a very elaborate set we had for this wheel.
I mean, I suppose at the time, something like a Texas death match might have been somewhat special enough that it would have elicited a big reaction, but I just can't imagine a pay-per-view today centered around what basically ends up being a last man standing match being all that special. You know, we have pay-per-views where every match is a gimmick match now. But they sold it certainly like it was a big deal. Oh, a Texas death match? No. No.
What's funny is people will always talk about why WWE won't do a War Games match, and we want to see a War Games. And here is one concept that the WWE has freely moved over with Raw Roulette, the wheel gimmick. So this is something that has stood the test of time and been something that every once in a while the WWE does pull out.
You're comparing War Games to a roulette wheel?
Oh, I'm just saying there are certain ideas of WCW's that they were happy to borrow from. Steve Austin then comes out, and we cut to the best sign of the entire night. Some fan in 1993 had a sign that read, "Stunning Steve is the wrestler of the 90s.
Yeah.
He was correct.
Was that not his gimmick at the time? Was that not like a catchphrase of his?
Sometimes the announcers would put that fact over. But Steve Austin comes out to challenge Dustin Rhodes for the United States title.
Yeah, Stunning Steve Austin, one of the originators of the hipster undercut. Way ahead of his time.
So the match begins, and Rhodes blocks this Boston Crab attempt, and they bring up how Steve Austin once held the television title for 18 months, a title reign which never happened. This is worse than the WWE's math, as his longest run was 11 months, but let's say 18. It's close enough. Rhodes was also going to be taking your phone calls on the WCW hotline after tonight's show, so I guess that kind of gave away who was going to be winning. Austin gets sent to the floor. He's grabbing his knee. Rhodes goes after the injured knee. Shivani notes the great crowd we have here in New Orleans as they had this aerial shot of this dead audience that are just sitting on their hands, and says that our researchers are busy looking up the rules of the Texas Deathmatch, which is reassuring. Austin fights back. He uses his good right knee to drop onto Rhodes. They're delivering slaps. Rhodes fires back with strikes. Then Austin lifts him and crotches him on the top turnbuckle. Rhodes comes back with a series of two counts, and then it's Rhodes who hits a Thez press to Austin. Austin then lands on top. He's using the rope for leverage, gets a three count, but the bell doesn't ring. Austin goes looking for the title, thinking that he has won, and this allows Dustin to come up from behind and roll him up and get the pinfall, even though Austin clearly kicks out at two. Match went 14 minutes and 24 seconds, and I think the audience was more confused than anything about what they had seen here, because if you were just watching this, it looked like Austin got the win, and then Rhodes was able to sneak away with the title.
I don't think it was that confusing. I mean, you had one guy...
It looks like a pretty clear kick out at two by Austin during the roll-up at the end.
I didn't really see the kick out. I mean, it looked like... wasn't this the one where the referee basically didn't call for... Yeah,
he hit the mat three times, but then was explained to Austin that that Rhodes kicked out.
No. Austin had his feet on the ropes to pin Dustin. And then the referee counts to three, but then afterwards says...
Right, he's using the ropes for leverage, yes.
Says he caught him using the
ropes.
That's
right. But his hand did hit three times, and then he was explaining, right, that he was using the
ropes. Yeah, so he's saying you actually didn't win because I caught you cheating.
Yes.
And so that's when Dustin schoolboyed Austin for the actual win.
Yes. Rhodes was also bleeding from the forehead afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Got cut open here.
Yeah. Yeah, this match, I mean... Again, you know, watching these shows, part of the appeal is to be able to see a lot of these guys who would go on to, you know, have more successful or popular gimmicks in their earlier incarnations. And here, I thought was a prime example of that with Dustin Rhodes and stunning Steve Austin. I thought Austin here, to get to see him work as like a pretty, I wouldn't say generic, but like a pretty, you know, less of a defined character than Stone Cold. But to just see a man this talented at pro wrestling work as a genuine heel, I thought was great. I thought he was tremendous. Dustin, obviously, a little less experienced than Steve Austin, it looked like. But I thought he was a very effective, young, you know, stereotypical blue chipper babyface here.
There was, you know, I saw a lot of comparisons on this show to TNA, more so of the past few years, where typically it was creative that was a really negative, and they weren't doing tremendous business. But, man, you had some great talent that was in the middle of the card. I think if you were to compare this roster in October of 93 to the WWF's roster, top to bottom, I think there was no question that WCW had the deeper roster at the time.
Yeah.
And you were seeing a lot of guys on the rise. You had some quality people in the main event picture as well. And it just seemed like they had a much more well-rounded roster from a start-to-finish show.
Yeah, it really felt like, I mean, much of the bulk of this roster would go on to become the main eventers in WWF. I mean, Cactus Jack, Steve Austin, I suppose Regal.
Even Dustin Rhodes would have a very strong run in WWF a few years later.
Sid.
Of course. they plugged Battle Bowl on Saturday, November the 20th, which was part of the prior Starrcade, but now was going to get its own pay-per-view as they fought for a ring. Scorpion, Too Cold Scorpio and Marcus Alexander Bagwell were next. They had just won the tag titles. It had been taped a few weeks ago, but aired the prior night on WCW Saturday Night. And now we get the immediate rematch against former champions, the Nasty Boys.
The Nasty Boys out with the first
escort.
Nasty lady of WCW.
Missy Hyatt.
Which I thought was a perfect pairing. Because she does look pretty nasty, this girl. Like, I remember she started that porn site with Sonny.
Right.
Wrestling Vixens. And she's a perfect fit for the Nasty Boys, I'll just say.
Well,
she looked like Miley Cyrus here, like an older Miley Cyrus.
She does look like Miley Cyrus, you're right. I could see Miley Cyrus very much looking like her at 30.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Schiavone did something that was probably a bad decision for the wrestling industry. This is not the kind of comment that typically ages well when we go back and watch these wrestling shows from the early 90s. they had these graphics for Halloween Havoc where the people's faces would be on these tombstones as the match board.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony says how the Nasty Boys, their faces look good on a tombstone. Which,
oh,
I mean,
boy.
There's many people he could have made that comment about where that probably would look very insensitive in 2015,
you know,
but he escaped that with this joke.
I mean, looking up and down the roster here, I'll say for an early 90s show, this is not that bad of a show in terms of...
What is the number on this show? We have Rick
I'm
Rude.
Counting two. Rick Rude and Davey Boy.
Davey Boy.
I mean,
is that it?
Dusty worked in the backstage, but as far as like on screen, I can't really...
Yeah, you're right.
See much else.
Well, there you go.
So, yeah, that's a good thing.
So, we had Missy Hyatt in the corner of the Nasty Boys and Teddy Long in the corner of Too Cold Scorpio and Bagwell. Buffer introducing the Nasty Boys was just awesome. For a guy that has introduced Evander Holyfield and Mike Tyson,
we
to
keep
add
saying,
Jerry
yeah,
Sags
we
and Brian
keep,
Knobs to that list.
We keep saying that, but this man also introduced the Hogan giant monster truck match. He's done a lot of crazier shit, too.
Marcus Alexander Bagwell was accidentally keyed as Too Cold Scorpio, as they are two men difficult to tell apart.
That happens. Yeah.
And they identify Missy Hyatt not as a manager, but as an escort. And that prompts Jesse Ventura to... He seemed to get in a lot of digs at Missy Hyatt throughout this particular match. He called her a dumb blonde, says she looks like someone that would be part of an escort service. I mean, mm-hmm. really got his shots in on Missy Hyatt, it seemed like. As the match begins, Bagwell forces himself onto Missy Hyatt and kisses her. And Schiavone calls it a Halloween kiss.
Yeah. Did this bother you?
Most would call that sexual harassment. And then the fans start chanting, "Whoop, there it is," which was a very popular chant, it appears, to have been in WCW in 93.
The fans were chanting that throughout the entire show. I mean, I remember it being a popular song back then, but there's nothing that'll date a show more. It would be like yelling, "Who let the dogs out?" Like if a crowd of chanting,
be like
who
yelling,
"What's
up?" at a show in 2015.
Yeah.
It's
or like
oh my God.
What would people chant today? Like if people started chanting YOLO in a 2013 show, and we'd watch back in 30 years later.
Yeah, or in 2050 saying, WrestleMania is coming to the six. The six. Who came up with that?
Drake.
Scorpio hit this double cross body from the top. They cleared the ring of the Nasty Boys. I thought this was the hottest the crowd had been all night.
Yes.
Getting into Scorpio and Bagwell, who were this great babyface tag team.
And the Nasty Boys, a great heel team, I thought. I mean, say what you will about their technical ability. They really didn't need it. I thought they were both incredibly charismatic, both in look and in their shitty-looking, nasty wrestling style. And I think, again, having a nasty manager, nasty-looking manager.
Boy, you and Ventura, I don't know what you have against her.
Missy Hyatt really helped.
By the way, someone to follow on Twitter is Missy Hyatt.
Oh, yeah?
She is like a historian, a pro. Like, she has so much factual knowledge about everything that happened in professional wrestling. You should seriously follow her.
Okay, I will.
Her tweets are great. The match continues. I was going to say, WCW, I didn't get to see it a whole lot in 1993. It would just be by chance. You would maybe flip through and an edition of Power Hour was on or something. But I remember when right around the time that Bagwell debuted, I thought this guy was going to be such a big thing. Like, he just seemed to have all this potential.
Totally.
In 93, like, you would think, man, this guy,
he's so
very passable as a tag team wrestler, and,
He's so handsome.
Very handsome.
That's
the Handsome Stranger. That was his former moniker.
Oh, really?
He was known as the Handsome Stranger.
Okay. Now, isn't it funny that he ended up being the escort?
Wow. That's a great connection that I did not make.
He's the nastiest one of all of them.
So Ventura, this is when he calls Missy a dumb blonde on the floor tonight after saying she fits in with being part of an escort service. Schiavone mentions we have a new feature where we have Mike set up in the ring. Then Bagwell is sent over the top to the floor. Missy slaps Buff Bagwell, sorry, Marcus. And then Sags hits a belly-to-back suplex to Bagwell on the floor, and he's selling big. Very slow at this point, but the crowd was behind Bagwell, who they got the heat on forever. They pull the hair of Knobs, makes the tag, but the referee does not see Scorpio get the tag. Knobs then misses a splash. Bagwell clothesline Sags, and this time makes the hot tag to Scorpio, who comes in. He hits this jumping spin kick that totally misses Knobs. Then he connects with one to Sags. Moonsault is delivered to Knobs. Then Sags misses, dropping an elbow onto Knobs. Missy and Teddy Long both get on the apron, and Bagwell runs Hyatt and Sags into one another. Scorpio hits a 450 splash onto Sags, but behind the referee's back, Knobs gets his boot and hits Scorpio with the biker boot and allows Sags to get on top, and they pin them at 1440, and they win back the tag titles with a 24-hour title reign for Marcus Alexander Bagwell and Too Cold Scorpio.
I thought this match far exceeded my expectations going in. I was very impressed with the Nasty Boys and Missy as an effective heel package. And I thought Scorpio was definitely the workhorse amongst the team, but it was Bagwell that seemed to receive most of the attention. And I thought Bagwell played a very good rookie babyface.
Bischoff is backstage with Sid Vicious and Colonel Parker. Parker says it's a very scary time. And then Sid says that some people call me Psycho Sid. And if they didn't call him that, they would be by the end of the week. And this was a classic Sid promo where he went from low talker to screaming and threatens to steal the soul of Sting tonight. And it's a battle of who is the franchise of WCW.
I'm surprised not more people, like, no one else really has kind of adopted this the Sid promo pattern where you talk so quietly.
I wonder why that is.
You talk so quietly, like, so you have to listen to it. Like, you gotta, like, bring your ear closer to the TV to even listen to him.
Time for you, Sting, to wake up from the nightmare that you've been experiencing. It's time for you to step into the ring. It's time for you to face reality. Yeah, some people call me Psycho Sid, but tonight, at Halloween Havoc, you'll call me the Grim Reaper. For what I'll do to you, Sting, I will grab you by the throat! And I will lift you 7 feet in the air and drive your skull on the mat. And 1 second before you go, I'll take your soul, Sting, because I'm Sid Vicious and I rule the world.
And then he just starts screaming.
Yeah, maybe that's, it's like screwing with people. It's like, could you imagine if you had headphones on and someone did that? And it's like, you're cranking. It's like, I can hear him. Oh, and then he blares it at you.
Yeah. I actually quite like it. I mean, obviously, he kind of probably overdid it a little too much, but to go back and watch him do it once in a while, it is fun.
Sid Vicious and Sting, the battle of who is the franchise. You would think one of the many world champions they had would be considered the franchise, but no, this was a separate...
different title. Yeah.
This was a separate identification they were battling for. This was also a rematch from Halloween Havoc from 1990, which Shivani did bring up in commentary. This is where we saw the insane fan in a Sting shirt and face paint, where the vein is coming out of his neck, and he's yelling that Sting was the man. But then we would go back, and that was where it seemed like he was... people were chanting Sting, and then he was yelling, sucks.
Yeah.
So John Cena, it was nothing new here. And maybe this fan represented Sting to John Cena, the bridge, this guy had a John Cena prototype haircut.
This fan just like looked like he was he had multiple personalities. One part of him wanted to like Sting, but the other wanted to hate Sting.
I wonder if this fan was a plant.
No. It wouldn't have made sense. He would have just started chanting for Sting. But this guy looked like possessed, though. Possessed by something.
Sting clotheslines Sid to the outside of the apron, and then Sid goes to the floor and gets sent over the barricade, and they brawl into the crowd. There was a top rope clothesline by Sting as they got back in. Colonel Parker grabbed the foot of Sting, and it allowed Sid to hit a choke slam. Then Sid climbed to the second turnbuckle, put his arms in the air like he's God, and yelled to the crowd, I'm Sid Vicious.
Sid? Sting yelled that?
Sid yelled that.
Oh, okay.
Just to clarify for everyone. he stomps down on Sting. Colonel Parker is choking Sting with his kerchief. And then Sid hits this ever so light chair shot to the back of Stinger.
It was so light.
To avoid a Stinger.
Yeah, I guess so. But it's to see like Sid's chair shot here in comparison to some of the chair shots in the main event.
Oh, yeah.
They're a world of difference.
Hey, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I'll take these ones over the main event ones. He then dropped him throat first on the barricade. This was when we got the fans chanting Sting and cut to the super fan yelling sucks. And it was also evident that some of the fans were chanting Sid as well. Like, he was getting a bit of a babyface reaction.
This type of match between these two, you can easily get confused. Sid, Sting, Sid, Sting, Sid, Sting, Sid, Sting, Sting. It sounds the same eventually.
Well, Sid, in his ever so brilliant way to kill off these Sid chants, just went to...
Maybe they're chanting Sing, Sing.
Sing, Sing. He applied a bear hug. There was also this nasty-looking welt on the back of Sting. I don't know where he got that from.
They were claiming it was from the chair shot.
I don't think that could have been.
It was not that chair, which was padded, by the way.
Yeah, it was a padded chair to the back. Sting came back with two Stinger splashes. He knocked Parker off the apron. Then Parker. Oh, this was the worst finish of the night. He goes to do the infamous Bobby Heenan spot with Rick Rude and the Ultimate Warrior from WrestleMania 5, where he goes to pull out Ultimate Warrior's leg, allowing Rick Rude to fall on top, and then Bobby Heenan held down the feet of Warrior for leverage so Rude could pin him. In this one, Parker grabs one of Sting's legs and one of Sid's legs.
He's just like, he's pretending that he can't, he's just reaching for legs.
He's like fake looking away.
He's not even looking. He's like just reaching for legs, yes.
So then he decides to pick a leg and goes all in, pulling his weight down, but he's grabbed Sid's leg without turning around to look. So
how does that even happen? How do you pull on something and not be in the same line of vision as what you're pulling at? It's not like you're pulling onto your side.
So this allows Sid to fall down, and Sting is on top and only gets a near fall. Sid still overcomes this stupidity. But this prompts Sid to get upset at Colonel Parker, and then Sting rolls up Sid for the win at 10:44. The franchise has been decided based on a shitty finish. Sid then walks out on Colonel Parker and won't speak to him as Ventura laughs during the replay at how preposterous this was on Colonel Parker's end. And this was designed to turn Sid babyface because they had big plans for him to go challenge Vader for the WCW title at Starrcade. That would not happen.
Not with a great start like this. Wow.
Wow.
Jeez. I mean, this was a really poorly executed finish, and probably I don't know how you could have done this without looking stupid, but he can't tell feet apart. He can't. He has a problem. All feet look the same.
So bad.
He can't tell the different legs.
We should go over what happened on the European tour, because this would drastically change plans going into Starrcade. What happened was Arn Anderson and Sid were apparently at the hotel bar. It's unknown who started what, but apparently the story went that Sid was being more than forthcoming about his placement in WCW as compared to Arn Anderson, and the fact that he had, in order to do this job for Sting, he was given a brand new contract and got a significant raise and was kind of a... letting it be known how much more he made than Arn Anderson. And I would venture to guess some drinking was probably involved in all of this. Anyway.
I make much more liquid cash than you do.
It's just something that can be very heated, I assume.
Yeah.
So they went off to their rooms, and then somehow they found each other later in the night. Who attacked who first? It's unknown. But scissors got involved. Each of them were stabbed. They ended up... this was big news in England, this hotel brawl involving both men. They ended up being taken off TV for quite some time. It ultimately ended with Sid being let go, and Arn did retain his job. However, Sid was out of their plans. That led to Ric Flair then going after Vader for Starrcade and winning the title, which turned into be a really great main event and build for Starrcade that year. But Sid ended up leaving. He would go to the WWF in 95 and then would come back to WCW in 99. And in one of his first segments back in WCW, it's him and Arn in the ring together. And as they're going to commercial break, you see Sid go over and shake his hand. And it was like this really weird deal. But that was the story of what happened in Blackburn in
Sorry,
the UK.
Sorry, I stabbed you with scissors.
Well, it happens, I guess. You know, you argue. Best to not brag about your contract status or your place on the totem pole. But I don't know. Both clearly upset the other. And WCW ruled, I guess, that Sid was more to blame than Arn Anderson, who did end up sticking around with WCW.
Yeah.
But that's what Sid had to look forward to a few days after this particular Halloween Havoc.
Sid, to me at least, clear Scott Putski award winner on this show. There's just no debate. This is the biggest I've ever seen the man.
So then Vader and Harley Race are shown in the back where Vader is practicing his boxing and like hitting mitts, except Harley Race don't wear mitts. He just hits him in the hands.
Whoa. Tough.
Just a badass. Listen, this is a very underrated wrestler-manager combo. Vader and Harley Race. Yep. I thought these two were great together.
Mm-hmm.
Cactus Jack is then shown rocking back and forth in the split screen, and he's holding a bag that he won at Fall Brawl.
What's in the bag?
I don't know. Then we went to Rick Rude.
Bag.
That's what they said. He was holding a bag.
Won a bag from in a match?
I guess, maybe. Rick Rude against Ric Flair for the WCW International Heavyweight title, which is now recognized as an official world title. Ric Flair was accompanied by...
This was the big gold belt.
This was the big gold belt match. Yep. Ric Flair was accompanied by Fifi the Maid, who is now Ric Flair's actual girlfriend.
Oh, okay. Yes. They're actually dating.
Yes.
Are you sure they're not divorced already?
They're not married yet.
Okay.
Shivani explains that...
You know, Fifi's looking awful good for somebody that spends her life down on her knees scrubbing floors.
Well, that's the way beautiful women are, Jesse. They can be on the floor just scrubbing away, but you make them up, take them out on the town, and they look wonderful.
Women can spend their time scrubbing floors, but if you make them up and take them out on the town, they can look great. This was quite the comment by one Tony Schiavone. Terry Taylor is our referee on the floor. Rude comes out looking just jacked. Like, this guy barely fit into his tights. He looked so much bigger than his body probably should have been. He comes out, cuts a promo on the Louisiana Losers, and calls himself the undisputed champion of the world in a promotion where the very definition of their title situation is dispute, and has the most ridiculous-looking airbrushed tights with a pumpkin on them, along with the pictures of Ric Flair with a black eye and Fifi the Maid.
Yeah.
Quite the tights by Rick Rude. I thought, I don't know if it was just me, but I thought Fifi had a striking resemblance to a younger Dixie Carter.
I think it's just you.
Okay. Flair applies the figure four earlier in the match. Rude gets a rope break. He wraps the left knee of Rude around the steel post, which didn't send him head first, so it was not a DQ, and would work over the knee throughout the match, and Rude was constantly limping. Rude tried to use a chair, and Terry Taylor stopped him. Rude has the advantage. He chops him off the top, but as he lands on the bad knee, he starts selling that in pain. Knocks Flair into the camera. I thought this was a very slow match. Rude applied a bear hug, took him down into a pin attempt. Zero heat for this. Rude then came off the top again, missing him, and Flair hit Rude's own move, the Rude Awakening, a reverse neck breaker for a two count. Then there's a reverse Irish whip that sent Flair into referee Randy Anderson. This allows Terry Taylor to come in and replace Randy Anderson, but then Rude gets knocked into Terry Taylor, and our backup referee gets knocked out. So Rude gets these knucks on his knuckles, and Flair back suplexes him, and then Flair takes the foreign object, hits him with it. Taylor only counts two, and Randy Anderson is late in stopping Terry Taylor's count to explain that Ric Flair has used the brass knucks. And there's this fake celebration by Ric Flair, but it is then announced that Flair has been disqualified. and Rick Rude retains the title. This thing went 20 minutes, and then Rude tried to steal Fifi and run away with her on the ramp.
Well, Flair had taken the belt, so Rude instead took Fifi.
Rude was going to make a straight-up trade, and he went to steal Fifi, and Flair stomped him on the ramp, and Rude ended up leaving with his title. Yet another match that just – another finish where it was like, what? There were so many matches on this show where it's like you just didn't want to commit to any kind of finish, so why are we doing this? What am I getting out of this show? There was some good wrestling on this show, but it just felt like we're going to protect everyone on this show.
Yeah.
It got tiresome by this point.
Did they even go for have a rematch after this?
No, because they had to change stuff around. The following month was the Battle Bowl, so there was no title match. And then Flair got moved to replace Sid and challenge Vader in December.
Right.
So they kind of just got away from this afterwards.
Yeah, the match wasn't really anything special.
I didn't like this match at all, to be honest.
I thought they got pretty good heat for the finish with the brass knucks and everything, but overall, not that great.
Then we go to the main event, the Texas Death Match, which they explained the rules for, and boy, were there some here. There are no disqualifications. This sentence, I understand what he meant, but it was just so funny to hear it said. Falls don't count, and there are 30 seconds between falls.
Falls don't count.
So a fall would not end the match.
Okay.
But you did have to pin your opponent. Then he had a 30-second rest period. And then after the 30 seconds, a new 10 count would begin. And if you don't answer the 10 count, then you have lost the match.
So essentially a guy would have to stay down for 40 seconds.
Yes.
Right?
I feel the 30-second rest period could have been done away with, and this could have been a much simpler match, much how the WWE does. I mean, they don't even do falls for last man standing matches. It's just you knock a guy down, and then the count begins.
Really? They don't even do the pinfalls?
No.
So then a guy could just be, like, on his back, and they would start counting?
Yes. I guess so.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
But the rest period, first of all, makes it sound pretty lame. I mean, we're going to give you a time to rest.
And then we'll start counting.
And it seems to take away the drama, too, you know? So, like, what's the point of the rest
34! 35! 36! Oh, he's up! Imagine investing in a count like that if you're a fan in the crowd.
So let me ask you, let's say...
He beat the count at 38!
Let's say somebody gets pinned, and then, like, they take the rest period, and then they get back up in the middle of the rest period.
And they collapse again?
Yeah, and then you start the count at that point.
It's where you are after 30 seconds. You can do that. You can use your rest period however you see fit.
It's a little strange.
You better be ready for that 10 count. That's the 10 that counts.
This is the Texas rules.
Texas, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we start the match. It's Big Van Vader against Cactus Jack. Non-title match. Mind you.
Mm-hmm.
This was a very bizarre program where they had a pair of matches on television where on one, Cactus Jack had been powerbombed on the exposed floor and literally, like, his head rocked off the floor. And this led to the infamous amnesia angle where Cactus Jack went to an asylum. There were some god-awful vignettes. It was really bad stuff. And this was the big revenge match for Cactus Jack after he had tried literally to forget that entire angle, but not a title match. Jack and Vader's, this was their first match, they said, since April of that year. Vader's mask got torn off almost immediately, and then Jack starts using a chair to the head of Vader. They do a reverse vertical suplex where Vader is sent onto the ramp. Jack is busted up above his left eye almost immediately in this particular match. Jack then fights off Harley Race, who has a chair, and ends up using the chair on Vader. They fight into a grave site at the entrance, and they both fall into this area underground where there is a Vader tombstone that has been designed. And the referee refuses to climb into this make-believe gravesite. Mm-hmm. So we're led to believe we're at an actual gravesite now. Both are bleeding after they come out of the grave. Jack then pins him on the ramp, but Jack then attacks him with a cactus prop that is set up at the entrance. Vader still gets up. There's a table put in...
Because his name is Cactus.
Exactly. That's why we had a cactus prop.
I see.
But there was no big van, though, at the front for Vader. Then they put a table into the ring. It's not properly set up in the corner. Jack goes for a sunset flip off the apron to the floor, and Vader misses, trying to splash him. Jack was just killing himself in this match. I mean, this was his first big main event. He had a bigger main event with Sting earlier in the year, but this was certainly an opportunity for Cactus Jack to kind of have a big showing.
Wasn't
in WCW.
But he was wrestling this style almost every match, though. Wasn't he? Doing the diving elbow off
the apron. Oh, he was doing this all the time, but this was a pay-per-view main event, so yeah. These were few and far between for Cactus Jack. So after the sunset flip spot, Vader goes over the barricade. Jack then runs at him, flips over the barricade, and, like, somersaults onto Vader. I mean, quite the athletic feat for a Mick Foley. I don't care if he was 28 years old at this time. He was still carrying a lot of weight.
Yep.
And did this pretty flawlessly. Crashes on the floor. Vader then attacks him with a chair, and this is the first time we spot that Harley Race has a taser. And you just think, oh, God. Where is this going to end?
Mm-hmm.
Vader hits a moonsault in the ring and pins Jack, but the match continues with Jack getting to his feet. Jack is then on the back of Vader on the ramp, and Vader just falls back, crushing Cactus Jack on the ramp, attacks him with a chair shot to the head, then a DDT onto the chair. The trainers are checking on Jack. Vader chases them off. The amount of similarities between this and the Brock Lesnar Undertaker match, between the hard way blood, chasing off the trainers that were checking on them. But no tasers.
No tasers.
There are no tasers in that match. Vader chases them off, pins Jack again. Then Jack gets to his feet during the 10 count, and behind the referee's back, Harley Race uses the taser behind the knee of Cactus Jack, which it clearly doesn't go off at the right time. And Cactus Jack has to sell in the most goofy manner. Go, ah! This reminded me of Daniel Stern from Home Alone having to sell the booby traps from Kevin McAllister. And this results in Cactus Jack being down for the count of 10. Vader is declared the winner after 16 minutes. And then Cactus Jack comes back after, hits a double-arm DDT to Harley Race, and it ends with him standing tall, but Vader has won the match. Mm-hmm. A pretty strong main event, I will say. Goofiness aside with the taser.
Yeah. I thought, obviously, Foley worked very hard. I think Vader's a tremendous heel as well. I wouldn't say that the match really made that big of an impression on me, though. To me, it just felt like a pretty good hardcore match. I don't think I cared much for the stipulation. I didn't care so much for the finish either.
Yeah, I think at the time this was a very novel match just because you didn't see these kinds of brawls all too often. However, we talked last week about the 5-star matches handed out to those two matches on the Dream Slam show. However, if we fast forward to this particular match, and this was 4.75 stars, this match. And I will say, I thought both Hell in a Cell matches from this past Sunday were better matches than this main event.
Yeah.
Both Hell in a Cell matches. So nonetheless, I thought a good main event. This was a pretty good show wrestling-wise, but the finishes really just did a number on me throughout this particular show, and that kind of hurt my enjoyment of this particular show. But what did you give this particular event?
I give the show perhaps a 6.5 out of 10. I thought it was just, to me, the main appeal of going back to watch the show was to see some of these well-known guys in their earlier. I thought this was a great roster on this show between guys like Steamboat, just a lot of legends: Steamboat, Orndorff, Austin.
That opening video, that alone is worth two.
Yes, Tony Schiavone dressed up as Jesse Ventura was worth seeing. But Vader, Foley, just a real list of names that you get to see in this period that doesn't get played too much in WWE history.
I'll go 6 out of 10. Did you have a Putski winner above all?
Sid, for me.
Sid is your pick.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I lean Rick Rude. I thought he was just very Putski-ish. That was his Halloween costume for this particular event. All right, we're now going to head on over to the message board. We'll hear what you had to say about Halloween Havoc 93. So we start off with Matt in suburban Detroit. Halloween Havoc 93 was better than I remember, with a lot of great workers on the show. In fact, Regal versus Bulldog may have been the best match on the show. 7 out of 10. Two questions. In the network era, would the WWE benefit from dropping the monthly concept pay-per-views and bring back a Halloween Havoc-type special or some other time-of-the-year themed special? Also, have there been many wrestling events themed around Oktoberfest? I remember a Saturday night's main event with the theme, but not much else. The idea of getting away from monthly shows, I don't ever see that happening.
No, he's saying instead of like Hell in a Cell, you do a Halloween Havoc.
Oh, and replaces. Or like your October show?
Yeah, or like a Christmas show that replaces the December show.
Listen, I don't think anyone is ordering a show because of the name. It's what's on the show and what you make of it.
Or the holiday. In fact, that would make me less likely to order it. Oh, it's just the Christmas show. I don't care about that.
Okay, we're going to have Austin and McMahon in a cage match. Ooh, and you're going to call it St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Put some arrows into the match.
I mean,
I
don't think there's anything wrong with bringing up...
Halloween works because it's like kind of like... It centers around death and violence and... danger.
Like if a Monday or a Thursday happened to fall on Halloween and you were going to do a show and for some curiosity you want to call that show Halloween Havoc, you could do it. It's nothing against doing it. It'll be some nostalgia for people, but the idea of just bringing it back for that name, like it's not like Halloween Havoc is, you know.
How about a civic holiday?
Oh yeah, that's true. I mean,
cage match.
First Monday of August. I mean, you could have
family day of
welcome to Raw is Civic.
Yeah. His second question: have there been many wrestling events themed around Oktoberfest? What is Oktoberfest? Is that another name for Halloween?
German food event every October, I believe.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know.
They did do a Saturday night's main event with an Oktoberfest theme.
So, like, with sausages?
Have you ever, you could do that.
I've never celebrated.
That's everyone was joking about calling it Brocktoberfest or something like that in October. But, giant hole in the market that someone could fill. Maybe if Global Force Wrestling gets going, we can have an Oktoberfest.
We go to McWhalen, who says, Halloween Havoc 93 was a two-match show with Davey versus Regal and the Cactus Vader deathmatch being the only memorable matches on the card. Normally, this would be a 4 out of 10 show, but I'll give an extra point for WCW using its brain for once and rigging the wheel to get the deathmatch stip. 5 out of 10, and that's generous. P.S. As I write this, the Blue Jays have just lost the ALCS. Tough luck, Pollock. Saw that Revere strikeout. There's always next year.
I don't even remember that anymore. Ronaldo from Milan. Say what you want about WCW, but in 1993, this was the alternative to the WWF's kiddie shows, and what an alternative it was. Foley, Regal, Vader, Sting, Rude, Flair, and the rest. The spin the wheel, make the deal thing had its merits. If only WCW had used it with some brains. I heard the thing was actually legit, which I find kind of stupid, hence WCW. Still fun show and lots of memories. A year after this, Hogan would be entrenched in the main event scene, and nothing would be the same again. Why have a Texas deathmatch in Louisiana? To make it sound tougher, I'm sure that was probably the thinking. And the Texas Deathmatch does have a history
in professional wrestling. It's an actual
match type. That's true. Say what you will, Hogan increased business significantly over 1993 numbers. So you can look at, you know, Hulk Hogan, whether it was a positive or a negative. From a business point of view, it was definitely a positive bringing in Hulk Hogan.
Is this the 6 or the 6S? This phone.
Oh, the 6S.
Oh, cool.
Sorry. Okay. I thought you were saying something about the 6.
Checking out the size of the phone.
Is it okay?
It's great. I love it. It's a bigger screen. Yeah. It helps the eyes. Ben from Vancouver. Mixed bag on this show. Loved Vader, Cactus, and Bulldog Regal, but everything else was mediocre to bad. Rhodes, Austin, Ric Flair, and Steamboat Orndorff all sound good on paper, but were way too long and had bad payoffs. Question, was this the start of the Flair-Rude legit heat? Seemed like such an anticlimactic way to end the match. Why wouldn't Flair put him over, and what was the point of having Terry Taylor there?
I don't think this was a case of Flair refusing to put Rude over. I mean, I think it was Jody Hamilton in his book kind of talked about an incident once where Rude kind of had some words for Ric Flair backstage once. I don't think their issues were anything too significant, to be quite honest. We move on to DC. I assume Daniel Cormier, because this is a New Orleans event. I enjoyed some of the random commentary you gave us over the last few weeks, and I want to touch on a few things. Number one, The emoji with the shades is the most versatile emoji of them all. Me and my boys used to always use this in college back in the AOL Instant Messenger days.
Me and my boys.
It can mean okay, thanks, or just a simple acknowledgement of a text that you have no reply for. But wait, I'm interested in knowing the type of emojis you use on the females. You started talking about it, but then John pulled a Greenfield and power talked you.
It's the same as what I'll use with anybody.
Are you, smiley faces. Do you do the wink with the kiss, maybe?
Sometimes, yeah, sure.
I
might use
the hearts in the eyes.
I'll use all of them, man. I'll use the girl raising her hands, the monkey hiding the eyes.
And what does that mean?
The ears.
Does that mean you're not listening to them?
I don't know. I don't even know.
It seems like a rude one.
Oh, it's just there's no rude emoji.
She might reply with the red face.
There is no such thing as a rude emoji.
Oh, yes, there is.
Okay, what's a rude emoji?
You need that.
No, it's okay. You can find it. This is important.
Well, I mean, if I was really going to get upset at you, I mean...
Yeah, if you're really angry, what type of emoji would you use?
Well, I would... okay, let's say you told me... Okay. Okay, you say, hey, John, I know we were supposed to do the show tonight, but I fell asleep, and I can't do the show tonight.
Yeah.
I'd reply with that, and you'd know I'd be annoyed. I'm seething mad that smoke is coming out of my nose, yeah, and I'm frowning.
You chose a smiley face with the smoke coming out of the nose. That would just make me laugh, man. That would make me go back to bed and sleep for 5 more minutes before I got up.
That's horrible.
There's no way you can sound angry with emojis, and that's the great value of them. They make everything fun and playful.
I guess, yeah, especially into animals. I can't really convey anger through animals, but maybe if I ever send you... a pear.
A pear.
You'll know I'm pissed, okay?
Why is that?
Because I've just told you the definition of it for me. A pear, okay?
No, I don't know about that.
Well.
Here's a question for
the message board. What's the rudest emoji?
A rude emoji would be like something racial. Because they have like racial emojis.
You know, you can now pick like if Chinese. You want to send the bicep, you can or any of those. You
That's
can
right.
Pick skin
there's,
color.
There's like a various races, so you could be racist definitely via emoji. So if
How?
You wanted to hurt my feelings, you'd text me something negative with the Chinese guy.
Wow, I didn't even think of why people would do something like that with emojis.
Yes. So I hope that answers your question,
man. Are we ever going to read a story like in the newspaper about how some legitimate fight broke out over an emoji exchange?
I'm sure it's already happened.
Boy. The other one here from DC, life after death. Burials in caskets are in fact a waste of time and money. Do you think it would be possible for me to just donate my body to the world? I would want my dead body to be dropped in the middle of the ocean so that a shark or whale has a meal for them and their family. That would be better usage of a dead body than to just throw it into the ground. I don't think he's serious about this as an option for himself. I think he's just saying
this. Well, I think it's more about, you know, what did you eat throughout your life? And if you had an unhealthy diet, it would actually be polluting and harmful to the shark and its family.
Maybe if you had high mercury content, something like that.
I'm sure there are laws against that, so you're probably just better off doing it yourself.
All right.
Go to Chris in Ottawa who says, good fellows, this pay-per-view makes me sad as it is one of the very last big WCW events that would not have Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan's fingerprints all over it, better or worse. Finally, I respectfully disagree with Kid Cash's proposal for a more useful disposal of his corpse. Sharks and whales don't need human beings to survive. In fact, we're a very inefficient food source for them. A far more altruistic act would be to donate your body and or organs to science. There's a good chance that you'll help save multiple human lives that way. In fact, the entire law community should be organ donors. I hope that John and Wei have opted in and have the organ donor logo on their Ontario driver's licenses. A 10 out of 10 for John and Wei if they do. A 0 out of 10 if they don't.
Oh, wow. Do you, have you donated your organs?
No, hell no.
I think I have, to be honest.
You've done it already?
I think I did sign that.
Okay.
Years ago.
What'd you donate?
Oh, I can't remember. I didn't say much. I mean, you don't really need much. You're gone. Well, might as well go help somebody.
So wait, you actually get to choose? I was actually...
You can. You can actually pick,
making,
like...
making a choose.
Well,
a,
it's
a
like
joke.
Some people, especially if you're religious, I think you have an open casket funeral, for instance, or, you know, you want to... The idea... The further religious you get, I think the more you want to preserve with the idea of where you're going afterwards and being equipped.
So, like, I need my eyes.
Exactly. That's some, that's one of the options if you want to keep your eyes or not. But, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that...
Well, you had laser eye surgery, so...
Yeah, it's like...
They're valuable.
No, I want something a lot of money money's worth. Andrew writes in, whoop, there it is, gentlemen. The show was okay. Kind of boring at times. I think one reason it was for me was I didn't grow up with this, so most of the matches don't have much of a context for me. One thing you have to give credit to is the performers in WCW. It seems that every early 90s show you review, most of the matches go 20 minutes or more. When I heard it was going to be Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal, I was thinking some WCW trash, but the show was pretty serious for the most part. Hell, I even thought Jesse Ventura was on tonight and did a good job, especially in comparison to his other WCW outings. I also learned from this show that the Shockmaster has a pinfall victory over Booker T. 5 out of 10.
Bill from Hamilton, despite all the horrid build-up, the Cactus Jack being lost in with Cactus Jack being lost in Cleveland, it was hard not to get psyched for what promised to be a wild brawl. And much like was promised during your review of Raw Homecoming with Hardy and Edge, the babyface ultimately getting his revenge just didn't happen. And I understand where WCW was coming from. Obviously, they had a plan for Sid at the time to go face and be the one to beat Vader, and they stuck with it. Of course, a fork, or shall we say scissors, got thrown into those plans. Speaking of Sid, him and Sting was pretty much paint by numbers, and the Austin Rhodes Flair Rude matches really just never got out of first gear, and sad to see all these guys with such great talent really just seem to phone it in. And finally, that six-man tag to open the show seemed like a group of guys auditioning to be a garage band tribute to the Village People.
Wow. Okay, last one is from Vince in Colorado. I remember watching this show on Scramble Vision, like the rest of the pay-per-views back in the 90s. Cactus vs. Vader was good because of the build-up from WCW Saturday Night at 6:05 Eastern on TBS. Usually Captain Planet or a Braves game would be on right before. This was a good pay-per-view, and I give it 7 out of 10 in 1993, and 9 out of 10 after actually seeing it on the network 22 years later, to be honest with you. And one thing to note about that particular main event, it was very well received at the time, and Mick Foley actually was... He was interviewed shortly thereafter, and some fan called in and asked him, what was the highest point of your career so far? And he said, there's a moment in the match with Vader at Halloween Havoc where I've got a chair, and the crowd is all cheering, and I just take a look at everyone and thinking of how I've reached this certain level. And then the fan asked, well, what's the lowest moment of your career? And he said, 10 minutes later, when I realized I would never reach that level ever again.
Oh.
So a very pessimistic Mick Foley in 93, and he would go on to have much bigger highs than Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal in 93. But a very good main event, I thought, and pretty much good matches up and down, maybe minus the opener. But some of these finishes. And Dusty Rhodes would not last too much longer. He'd get replaced in January, actually, and then be ousted as the booker, or at least the head booker of WCW. That is going to wrap up the show for us this week. A lengthy look at Halloween Havoc 1993, our Halloween edition of Review Away.
Yeah.
Yes.
Scary.
Mm-hmm. So we did forget to dress up this week, which we promised we would do last week. Or did you come as with your hair?
I'm actually dressed up right now.
Oh, so the hair is by design.
Yeah.
I got it.
I grew hair for this podcast.
Very nice. Yep. You're going to get a haircut by next week?
Tomorrow, actually.
Boy. Well, next week we have a big review. Are you excited for this?
I don't know what it is.
Oh, so I'm going to announce
it. I'll tell you afterwards.
Well, we talked about this over the summer, about what we were going to review at some point in time. Next week, we are going to take a look at a promotion we have reviewed in the past, and we're going to go back to it. Pro Wrestling Guerrilla.
Oh.
Because back at the end of August of this past summer, they did their annual Battle of Los Angeles. We are not reviewing all three nights of it, but we are going to review night one of the Battle of Los Angeles. These are pretty lengthy shows, so at some point we're going to get to night two, but next week will be night one. We'll probably space them out a little. If there's enough interest, maybe we'll do night three at some point down the road, but we will do night one and night two over the course of the next little while. So next week is night number one, featuring the likes of Aerostar, Brian Cage, Andrew Everett, Will Ospreay, who was on the Progress show we reviewed a number of weeks ago, Trevor Lee, who you've seen on TNA, Drago and Pentagon Jr., Matt Sydal, The Young Bucks, Tommy End, Zack Sabre Jr., and Marty Scurll. Eurotrash. So lots of stuff to look forward to. Next week, we'll be reviewing stage one of this past summer's Battle of Los Angeles from Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. And that's going to wrap it up for us. We are going to be back all our usual shows this week. Carl Anderson will be on The Law Sunday night at midnight Eastern time. Way is going to be taking your Halloween costume suggestions at Way0937. And anything else you would like to say?
Nope.
Can we come up with a new t-shirt design to replace the outgoing Ronda shirt? Can we Can we open this up to some people to give us some t-shirt design ideas?
Sure.
Yeah. We're going to have to legally have you sign over the rights to these images to us so you don't try and steal money from us down the road, which apparently is now going to be an issue for us.
Well,
we're getting too big, Way. We're battling the big companies out there.
I know.
So I'm not happy about this.
Yeah. Oh well.
I like how you have to deal with this and not me.
Well, I'm not dealing with it. I'm not paying Reebok $180.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's great.
Reeboks. Oh my God. We own the name Ronda.
Yeah. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
Like that design. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about it. Whatever.
If anything, it should be Roddy Piper that's suing.
I would say, like, there are numerous people, I think, that could object to that.
Yeah.
Ronda Rousey would be near the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
Okay. So there you go. That's going to wrap it up. If you are a lawyer, maybe you can get in contact with Way.
Yes, please.
He has some questions.
Yep.
But that is all for us. Taking us out is this.
Something like this.
Yeah, Stassen, he's putting something in his mask. He put something in his mouth. Steamboat's out.
There's Hitman.
Whoop, there it is.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The bell. He didn't get it, Tony. That's only a 2 count.
Wait a minute. Are we sure?
Absolutely.
It is Hitman.
Three if he saw the ropes.
That's the ropes. 1, 2, 3.
Oh, man.
Upside down.
Oh, no. The boot on the head. Scorpio's out. 1, 2, 3.
And the Nasty Boys regained the titles.
He's got everybody's foot. Look at this.
Colonel don't know whose leg to grab. He grabbed Sid's.
He is going to disqualify Flair and give it to Rude.
And then as a pass, more of rock the mic. Uh-oh, I crave skin rip. Find a honey.
What has Race got in his hand? He's got some electric prodder. He stung him with it. He got him with bolts of electricity, Tony.
And Vader's up. Vader's up at 10. This match is over.
Come on.
Tag team music coming straight.